Happy afternoon, and we have a very special guest on the air with us this afternoon. I have Attorney General Alan Wilson on the phone. He's just been over there to Lawrence, I do believe, and gave the keynote address. Do we have a new solicitor here in the Eighth Circuit?
We do. We have a new solicitor, David Stumbo, and I'm very excited and proud of his success and think he's going to do a fantastic job.
Well, that's great. Now, y'all work together down there in the Attorney General's office, correct?
Well, actually, we did. We used to prosecute cases together, and prior to that, we had worked together in the 11th Circuit when I was still the Attorney General's office. I've been with him for about 5 years now, and in fact, when I got elected, I brought him back to the Attorney General's office because he was such a good prosecutor. So I'm real excited for the people in the 8th Circuit who are going to have a phenomenal solicitor.
Well, that sounds great. Let's see. You are on the road. Are you coming over here to Greenwood? Or?
Well, I'm heading back.
You're heading back?
I'm heading back to Columbia.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, if I drop you, that's why. We're on the interstate right now. The signal kind of comes and goes every couple of miles.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Well, listen, I have just a few things while I've got you here on the phone I'd love to talk to you about. You, of course, were very pleased with the South Carolina voter ID, how that turned out. And, of course, then you, what was it, last week, the federal government is going to pay some of the fees. And then I just got a press release from Lindsey Graham and Trey Gowdy saying that why was the government so hard on you?
Well, it was really interesting because when South Carolina passed the voter ID law, it fell on my office to once it was signed by the governor, we had to get free clearance from the federal government because it affects an election law. We did a legal analysis of it, found out that there was Supreme Court and federal court precedent in other states with a law like this, and that it was pre-cleared before by the Justice Department and held as constitutional by the Supreme Court. And so we felt that this law was solid. Whether you agreed or disagreed with it was irrelevant. It was legally valid. We sent a letter to the Justice Department saying as much. And for the cost of a stamp, we sent it to them. They denied pre-clearance and forced us to litigate it, which cost the state $3.5 million. Now Friday evening, the federal court ruled that South Carolina was the prevailing party in that lawsuit, and that the federal government would have to pay cost of litigation. Now, of the $3.5 million, I doubt it'll even rise to $100,000. It'll be less than $100,000 in cost that will be reimbursed to us. But we are owed money by the federal government as well as some of the other parties that challenge the law.
That's right. But Lindsey Graham and Trey Gowdy said that that really the Justice Department was pretty hard on you proving your case.
Well, they were very hard on us. And what's even more interesting is that people who were former members of the Justice Department who had talked to their counterparts over there said that the career attorneys, the non-political appointees, the people who work in the Justice Department from administration to administration, regardless of who the president is, reviewed our law and said there's nothing wrong with this law. It's been pre-cleared in the past. You should pre-clear this one again. And the political appointees, the people who come in with the administration, denied pre-clears. They overruled the career attorneys who don't have a political axe to grind. And so I believe Senator Graham and Congressman Gowdy are doing a good job and basically holding their feet to the fire and demanding that they give reasons as to why they did what they did.
Absolutely. Well, so do you think there's any possibility of getting any more money out of it?
Well, I think the court has already said in its order that we're allowed certain costs with the litigation, and they've said this is what we're going to allow you to be paid, and what we're going to do is we're going to come up with an invoice that reflects the court's order, and we're going to submit it, and it should be somewhere above 50 but below 100,000. That's my best guesstimate right now without having actually looked at it. But
sure.
It'll be a little bit of money, which is good.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Alan, it just seems like since you took office, you have been, Washington, D.C. has been, you and Washington, D.C. have been on targets here. The first it was Obamacare. We joined that lawsuit. Then, of course, there was the immigration lawsuit. Now, what's happening on that? You won part of it, but you're appealing it. Is that right?
Right. There was one part that, you know, Arizona was ahead of us in the immigration lawsuit. And there were three provisions of our law that were similar to the three provisions of their law that were heard by the Supreme Court. the United States Supreme Court ruled that one of the provisions was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court ruled that the other provision was constitutional. And the third provision the Supreme Court didn't really address. And so what we were waiting for, instead of spending money to litigate something, when we're going to get a sneak peek, a preview to what the court's going to say, we watched Arizona's law. And so we are implementing the provision that allows law enforcement officers to stop you. And if pursuant to that stop, like if you're speeding or violating a traffic law, and they can make it a determination beyond a reasonable doubt that you're probably here illegally, mm-hmm. then they can detain you for that reason. That provision is now in effect. The other provision basically required you to carry your papers on you. The Supreme Court struck that down. And then the last provision was one that the Supreme Court was silent on, and that is the one that we are actually going to look at litigating, and that's where we are right now.
And so the third part is what now?
I'm sorry?
What is the part that you're actually going to litigate?
Well, the part we're going to litigate is, well, one is an E-Verify with businesses, which is going to be upheld, and I have no problem with that. And then the other portion, the other provision that we're looking at wasn't the law enforcement one. It was the one that makes it illegal to harbor an illegal alien, or if you are an illegal alien, it makes it illegal for you to harbor yourself. In other words, ask someone to harbor you. So it's called the harbor provision, and it makes it illegal to harbor illegal aliens, and it actually gives a penalty and a criminal sanction for it.
Now, Alan, what happens if somebody is detained because they are illegal, they're stopped, they were speeding or whatever? Are they deported, or what exactly happens?
Well, that is a federal issue. The ICE would have to pick them up. That is a matter for the State Department and the Justice Department, implementation of federal law. We don't dictate immigration policy. We can't make people leave the country. That is only for the federal government. But what it allows us to do is it allows the federal government to utilize South Carolina law enforcement as a resource for detecting illegal aliens when they come in touch with law enforcement, and it gives them extra hands on the ground, if you think about it, because the federal law enforcement agents, the ICE agents, they can't be everywhere all of the time. These immigration enforcement specialists, they can't be in all 50 states the way local law enforcement is, and so this allows local law enforcement to be kind of an extension of the federal government for purposes of detecting illegal immigrants who are picked up by law enforcement for some other infraction or violation of law.
But are they sent to some detention center? Are they kept here in South Carolina? What actually happens?
The way it would probably work is that the state has a little task force set up, and that task force will come pick them up and then take them to the feds. They could probably temporarily be detained at a detention facility until the federal government can pick them up. That's probably how it would work out.
Okay. Now, just moving right along, one of the things that I know that you were doing also was Dodd-Frank. So what's happening with that?
Well, South Carolina is one of three states leading the charge on the Dodd-Frank litigation. This lawsuit is probably as important as the Obamacare lawsuit was, because what Dodd-Frank seeks to do is it does to the financial industry what Obamacare did to the healthcare industry, and that's to nationalize it, to centralize it. And it does so in a way that, first off, economically is wrong. It's going to be harmful to real people. But from a legal standpoint, it's unconstitutional in the way that they implemented this law. And without giving a legal dissertation, because we don't have that kind of time, and I'd be happy to come back on and talk about it, let me talk about the economic impact. If you're someone who needs a home loan to buy your house, or if you're a student that wants to go to college, and you need a student loan, or if you want to get a small business loan to open up a small business, or if you use a credit card, or if you use an ATM card, you're going to be impacted. It's either going to be harder for you to get loans, or it's going to be harder for you to engage in financial transactions because of Dodd-Frank. And it's actually going to run small banks out of business. And it's going to actually enshrine the concept of too big to fail banks, because what Dodd-Frank essentially does is the federal government basically is going to find the largest banks, and it's going to say, you're too big to fail, and we're not going to let you fail, which means all the investors, the people that hold the capital, are not going to invest in the banks that are too small. They're going to invest in the too big to fail banks, which is going to cause local lending institutions to collapse on Main Street and empower big banks on Wall Street. So Dodd-Frank is just a catastrophe. It does nothing to address the issues in the financial industry. It does everything to centralize power and control in the federal government. As we know, when the federal government controls something, it usually breaks it.
Absolutely. So where is that at, though, Alan?
We have filed our complaint. We're waiting on the federal government has just also filed their answer, and we're going forward. We should probably have this thing in the court system probably by late spring.
Wow. Well, you know, South Carolina certainly seems in the forefront of things. You really have taken it to two new levels. Alan, what do you look at over the last 2 years? What are you most proud of?
Well, I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, South Carolina, the little state, stood up to the Justice Department with unlimited resources and was able to get a law that our state passed, the voter ID law, get it passed the Justice Department. We were vindicated by a unanimous three-judge panel who's appointed by both Republican and Democratic presidents, agreed with South Carolina, and the fact that we were able to beat the Justice Department on our voter ID lawsuit is something I take pride in. The Obamacare lawsuit was not a complete waste because we lost the individual mandate, which allows Obamacare to be to go into effect. But what we essentially did is we won the fight on allowing the states to opt out of the Medicaid expansion provision of Obamacare. I think nearly 20 or more states have decided to opt out of Obamacare on the Medicaid expansion portion. And that is not something that the state would have had the option to do. Before, we were going to be required to join it, like holding a gun to the state's head, and so I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud going forward that the Attorney General's office is at the forefront of creating a new public integrity unit that will enforce public integrity laws and ethics laws that hold public officials accountable in a way that makes it more difficult for corrupt politicians to sweep cases under the rug. It makes them more accountable to the public, people like you, who are, in fact, people like me, our employer. So I'm real proud of that. I'm hoping that the General Assembly will adopt it in law this coming session. So far, people in both parties seem to be really for it. So we'll see if it happens by the end of the year.
Absolutely. Well, I know that, is there anything else coming up on the radar that you can tell us about?
Well, right now, a lot of the things that our office does are not in the public domain. It has to be that way. But I can tell you right now, I have an office of dedicated public officials, people who could make a lot more money in the private sector, but they choose to stay in the Attorney General's office because they love serving the public. They love being involved with law enforcement, and they truly have a servant's heart. And so we're doing a lot of things. We're making our office more efficient. We're streamlining. We're digitizing. We're targeting cases that affect the public interest that the public doesn't even know about at this time. This time next year, you will know about it. But we're working very hard to make South Carolina a better place to live, work, and raise a family.
Absolutely. What about the hacking case where the Revenue Department was hacked, Alan?
Well, you know, our office played a minimal role in that. We basically approved the hire of the attorneys who were basically doing the contract work for the credit monitoring for all the citizens whose identities and Social Security numbers and financial information were compromised. We actually don't have a role in that. The hackers, I believe, from what I understand, were out of the country, so we don't have the ability to go prosecute them or identify them. But we are working with the Budget and Control Board as well as the Department of Revenue to help facilitate on the legal side the contracting work to be done so that people can have their credit monitored efficiently and so that if their identities are stolen or they are abused in some form or fashion that they can get the adequate representation.
Absolutely. And just one more question. How's your dad and how was Christmas?
Listen, Christmas was great. The kids had a blast. You know, really at my age, when you got two young kids, you know, you don't really think about yourself. Your Christmas is seen through the eyes of a three-year-old and a four-year-old. And you ask about my dad, they call him Big Joe. That's his grandparent name. And Big Joe had a great Christmas with the grandkids. And my nieces and nephews were in town, and the Wilson family was just very blessed to be able to have our family here for the holidays and to be able to relax and spend time with our loved ones. And I'm sure you got to do the same thing, and that's something that we really look forward to every year when everyone comes to town.
Absolutely. Well, keep up the good fight. Thanks so much for calling us, Attorney General Alan Wilson.
Yes, ma'am. God bless you, and Happy New Year.
All right. Same to you. Bye-bye.